Welcome back to another edition of The Exchange. I'm Sam McPhail, joined with my co-host Blake Doyle. It's been a pretty interesting week. The economy, kind of phase one of the economy opening up, happened on Friday, May 1st, and we've kind of seen what has happened throughout the week. And we also have a pretty good guest lined up for today, so you can take it away from here, Blake.
Yeah, well, you know, it is. I'm encouraged to see the economy does have to open. It's been suppressed. There's going to be a lot of companies that have been challenged. We talked a little bit about that in the weekend. I mean, companies are having a hard time finding and accessing labor, and the labor relationship's going to have to change as far as salaries and remuneration. People are having a hard time with rents. We're seeing that on a pretty regular basis, and they're having a hard time accommodating customers now that want to reconnect, especially restaurants. Everybody's adapting, but it is a tough environment. So I'm encouraged that things have opened. Sam, you're in golf courses, so what's it like on the social side of things with the sporting?
Yeah, I played pretty good actually for the first round out. But your hands, like, everyone kind of gets thought that, oh, why aren't golf courses open yet? But they don't really realize historically they only open the 1st of May anyways. But I think because we were cooped up for the past 6 weeks, once the weather started getting nice, maybe 2 weeks ago, they were like, oh, when are the golf courses open? When are the golf courses opening? But they really wouldn't have been open much earlier, even if we could have had that opportunity. In terms of the social distancing, I was at Country View on Friday afternoon, but my tea time was like 4:30, let's say. Same as like you'd see at the grocery store, same as you'd see at any essential service. Like, they have the measures in place. Please stand 6 feet apart. Pay with card, like no cash. Pay with card or over the phone. And they only allowed one person per cart. I walked, so it didn't make a difference to me. But little things that kind of just to make it a little easier. They actually had the cups in the holes upside down, so you didn't have to reach in for your ball. It was just in probably an inch indent. So it's a little harder to putt when you're looking at that. But yeah, it was able to make it a little safer. And also, you didn't take the flag up, so you just left the flag there, so no one was touching it. Overall, though, like, I'm sure there was 4 golf courses open on Friday. There'll be probably another 10 opening this Friday. It gets people out and about, but you still have to be safe in terms of social distancing and making sure you're not touching everything. Another thing is they didn't put rakes in the bunkers, so it was a little easier to. I didn't end up in the bunker that much, of course. If you did end up in the bunker, you just use your foot rake.
Okay, and as far as social distance, I think, you know, the problem was, as soon as the weather broke, people were going to be released to the wild anyway. So they kind of had to open things up. Every other province is opening. Our incidence of infection has been declining. But, you know, with this relaxation comes a liberalization of connection. And I think you've probably noticed that I have. People are eager to get together, and they're not necessarily abiding by these restrictions. So, you know, in the short run, we're probably okay. In the medium term, as the province opens up and there's more traffic, there's still a higher potential that we could get some viral community transmission. So, you know, I guess if things get too relaxed too quick, there's a chance that they'll lock things back down. And that's really hard in the economy to start, restart. It's like a battery, in fact, as you may have noticed in the weekend.
Yeah, you're right. So
have you seen, like, are people, so your age, are they, you know, there's got to be a strong desire for socialization. Is it affecting people, your demographic, or people kind of,
I don't know if I speak on behalf
maybe more than they should.
I would certainly say that people would take it once. It's like you said, once the weather warms up, whether they're on a deck or in a house or whatever the case may be, the urge to maybe go out and meet up and just to kind of have that social interaction. Like, sure, we like meeting over FaceTime or over Zoom or over whatever, Snapchat, whatever the case may be, but it's not the same. Even if you notice, they'll be starting to, like, more businesses are starting to open up. There's going to be more meetings. The meetings will be longer because people want that one-on-one connection versus doing, or maybe just to have the, like, a homebody there to say, okay, this is a physical person. I'm not dreaming this. So I think we'll see a lot of that just in terms of maybe productivity. Once we get back into the office, it'll be a little lower because of wanting to talk to people, because you've been just at home, not being able to talk to people. But I think my demographic, much, much younger than your demographic, they have more of an urge to get out and do whatever. Obviously, you have kids and have a family, so it's a little different because you have that connectivity with them every day. But I'm sure you're getting maybe not sick of them, but some days they get a little bit more on your nerves than other days.
Well, I think they're getting sick of me, no question. But for the most part, I think people and the economy has adapted well. They've responded very quickly. So it's good. But now, got to get back to business. The challenge is going to be become very apparent how hard it is to get back. And we had a great guest on this morning who talked a little bit, working with people of that younger generation, trying to get them in classroom settings. So Mr. Sandy McDonald, the president of Holland College, chatted a little bit about how the college is adapting to this. And you had some good questions, Sam, but Sandy has a large pedigree, both from an education perspective and research he's done. He's had senior leadership roles within government, and now he's at the helm of one of the more important organizations as far as engaging people in the labor market. And that's going to be a challenge. We talked a little bit about that as well.
Definitely. And like Sandy provided a lot of insight in how prepared the college actually was prior to this. Obviously with any business, you can have a plan in place, but if you're forced the next day to within 48 hours, let's say, to shut down and provide your service in another way, whether it's online or whether it's by phone or whatever the case may be. But Sandy kind of outlined how they were very prepared. Obviously there was a couple maybe hiccups along the way, but overall very prepared, and they'll be able to do that moving into the fall. We talked a lot about different angles of what COVID has done, whether in industry and educational institutions or government, whatever the case may be. But certainly it's nice to hear the confidence that the college has moving forward, and that they will be able to kind of supply labor for our workforce moving forward, because they are a pivotal institution for providing jobs of any, whether it's IT, construction, nurses, anything. They are able to provide the necessary resources to fill our labor needs.
We didn't talk too much about it. I think the college has a really good collegial relationship with their other sister colleges in the region. But there's going to be a lot of shakeout from this, and maybe not all the colleges will thrive the way they have in the past. I think with the infrastructure that Holland College has and the leadership team, I think they're in a better position than many institutions to kind of persevere through this and then emerge at the other side. And this could be a couple of years where they can continue to build their infrastructure, expand their markets, maybe do more online training in other geographies. So I think it's a good opportunity for the college to really prove the depth that they have and take on some of these markets that could be really challenged to connect to people.
And as we mentioned too, obviously it's difficult whatever your industry you're in, but it's even more difficult when you have thousands of students needing their education to finish their semester or to move for next year, whether they're going to graduate, how it's going to look. So it requires not stern leadership, but effective and quick leadership to get the message out and transfer platforms. And I think the college mentioned that they're already in the process of doing this, whether it's like half and half, like a hybrid model for the future. But that now they're, like we said, with many businesses, they're forced to do it. Same as different companies are coming out with e-commerce platforms. Maybe they had them ready, but they didn't want to do it, and now they're forced to do it because they have to make money to keep the lights on.
Yeah, everybody's got to adapt, and certainly in this case, probably disrupt. So, I think Sandy described it as putting rocket fuel in their strategy. So anyway, the next, this fall will be a really interesting time for all education facilities, EPI, Holland College, public sector. I'm not even sure if schools can open effectively in the fall. So that's a whole other conundrum that Department of Education has to kind of wrestle with.
Luckily, I technically graduate on Thursday, so I don't have to worry about that next year.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm kind of wondering where you're going to post. You were the successful valedictorian, as I understand. And
yeah.
That's a kind of a bit of a disappointment, I'm sure, not to be able to give your address to your classmates. Are you going to be able to do that in some fashion?
Yeah,
I
did a revised version that'll actually be posted Thursday afternoon. So, well, pending that, you'll see it Thursday afternoon, which was our graduation date for the business faculty and I think engineering faculty. But anyways, I'm still staying positive, and I'll get my certificates to put on maybe this wall, or maybe we'll be back in the office someday that I can actually put them up and showcase my completion of university. But anyways, I think we've talked about it before. It's frustrating for any age student, whether you're graduating grade 6, grade 9, high school, or university, college, whatever the case may be. It's frustrating, but obviously we all are staying healthy, so I count your blessings versus getting mad over something. But there'll be ways to figure it out. I think the college, they might be too, but the University of PEI is contemplating the idea, maybe a fall graduation, but realistically, I don't think there's going to be too many show up. So we'll see what happens with that.
It's too bad for people that can't effectively mark that milestone, but maybe we'll have you on Thursday as our guest, and then we can critique your address.
Sure,
your
pick it apart. All the places where I'm maybe full of baloney.
I'm sure it'll be entertaining, so I look forward to it. Well, I think that's it. Why don't we plan Sure. Well, introduce Sandy.
We'll swing this. We'll queue up the Sandy interview, and we will talk to you, I guess, next episode. Today on The Exchange, we are joined by a pretty recognizable figure within the downtown Charlottetown core. We are with the president of Holland College, Mr. Sandy McDonald. I'm joined also with Blake Doyle, the co-host. How are you today, Sandy?
Great, Sam, and yourself?
Doing just fine.
I'm doing great, too, in case I don't get asked. You know, we've come off this the COVID rules have been relaxed a little bit. In fact, I think people have taken a lot more liberties with the relaxation than maybe was intended, but business is starting to resume a little bit to normal, and that's a good thing. And hopefully the viral infections don't spike. But Sandra, we've got you on to talk a little bit about Holland College, how you've adapted to this challenge. And really, I see your business model transforming quite a bit. Tell us a little bit about what was happening at Holland College right up until probably early March, and then how you've pivoted to kind of accommodate this unusual circumstance and what the future holds for Holland College.
Yeah, Mike, thanks. We have 12 partner schools in China, and we have about 2,000 students there jointly with other institutions. We knew way back in January that there were some issues there, so we were a little cautious about travel. We shut down travel early on. But prior to that, we were recognizing that we wanted to move our content from primarily a face-to-face 5-day a week, 2-semester approach to more a blended model where you put a lot of your knowledge competencies online and still go with your skills face-to-face. So we were well down that road before the virus hit. However, it provided rocket fuel to that dynamic. And we were forced really to put everything online in a very short period of time. So it was quite a challenge.
So you've got 11 physical campuses on PEI. And from my observation, and I'm not that close to the college, and I did have an IT company years ago, and we had a lot of very senior people. So we'd have, I don't think we had PhDs, a lot of masters, a lot of bachelors in computer science. But the real work engine for our group, and we had 50 people, were people educated at the college level. And these are people with the skills that we needed to grow. And that'll continue to be the case, I think, as the workforce kind of adapts. But, you know, going forward, how does a college transform into this environment? And you're well positioned because technologically, as you said, you've been doing this for a long time. I'm sure there's other colleges in the region that are going to really struggle with this. And how do you come out ahead of some of these? I mean, I know they're collegial relationships, but at the end of the day, you're all fighting for the same students.
Yeah, we are, Blake. It's interesting that we've kind of rethought that dynamic as well. A couple of years ago, we started, probably started in February 2018, we started working more closely with the other six Atlantic region colleges, French and English. And during this period of time, our presidents meet once a week, our VPs meet once a week. And so we're doing a lot more collaboratively than ever before. And we have a couple of major projects we're working on together. Some of it's got funding, which the announcement will come a little bit later. And it's all about, we're all seeing a similar dynamic in that we need to work a little bit closer with industry, and we need to put a little less time on the face-to-face, a little more time on the blended model. So it's actually become a much more collaborative dynamic in Atlantic Canada among the seven colleges than one that we would describe as competitive.
So if you look outside of the region, if it's a good working relationship with your cousin colleges locally, is there an opportunity to grow the college outside of the Atlantic region? Can you pick up more remote education in new markets that you didn't think of tapping before?
Absolutely. And I think part of the dynamic, years ago, like many of my friends, I went to work in Fort McMurray, working outside in the, I was actually working on 50 sewer lines. One of the dynamic experience up there was if you came from the Atlantic region, the employers really wanted to hire you because you had the reputation of being good workers. And one of the reasons that's driven the other colleges to work together, all seven of us, is that we'd like to get an Atlantic dynamic or an Atlantic brand, if you will, that if you're coming to a community college in Atlantic Canada with our 50 or 60,000 students, you're getting a graduate that can work anywhere in the world. So we're really pushing that dynamic in terms of attracting new students to Atlantic Canada. That's also part of the dynamic because we provide a very high quality program it's safe here in Atlantic Canada. People come here, they want to get an education in English, you know, at a good price, and then stay in the country. So we think working together will provide a much more viable solution for people outside the country than just simply working against one another.
Yeah, that certainly makes a lot of sense. And we talked about how the college has kind of pivoted going forward. But my question is, whenever you got the announcement, say middle of March, 6 weeks ago or so, that basically the college has to shut down, no physical being in physical classes, I guess, how did the college set up kind of the end of the semester for students in terms of classwork and also graduation or whatever the case may be? So how did the college just set that up?
Yeah, it's a good question. And we were lucky in many ways. First of all, we were lucky that the semester had already almost completed. So the relationship between the instructors and the students was very well developed. So there's a lot of trust and a lot of understanding, a lot of communication. So that was really, the timing factor was quite helpful. Would have been quite different had it started at the beginning of the year without that relationship being developed. Number two, I think that we have a phenomenal instructional staff here at the college who are used to kind of challenges and being flexible. And we have a very, very strong support staff in terms of our curriculum people and our program managers. So we realized during this first few weeks, but boy, they were really working well together. So that was a huge benefit. We had to go back and look at work that was already done to see what we could glean from that. And then we had to look and see what we could actually put online that wasn't online at that point in time. So there was an incredibly busy couple of weeks before we had to deal with the students. And again, if it wasn't for the skills and commitment of our faculty, we wouldn't have nearly been as successful. We still have some programs. There are several programs in the health side, paramedicine, dental assisting, resident care worker, practical nursing. We're trying to get into the clinics and the hospitals and the manors to complete their skills. And there's a few other programs outside health where we have to delay completion, for example, commercial diving until they do their deep dive. But for the most part, we were able to get our kids through that piece because we were prepared, because we had a strong staff, and because the timing was in our favor as well.
And like you said, it does require kind of to be prepared prior to it, but it also requires fast just strategy and decision-making. And I think the college proved that in the matter of a couple of days that you're able to put a plan in place and stick to it and allow students to have the, whether they're graduating or just, or if they're first year, to be able to finish their semester and be able to kind of finish their studies so they can be set on the right track and going into next year as well.
Yeah, I think the other thing that we had working to our advantage was we have a very, very strong administrative team here. And it was perfectly aligned. It was very well aligned. So the communication was strong right from the instructor to the program manager and the directors up to the senior management team. So we had the right people in the right places with good alignment. And in particular, we had phenomenal instructional staff. So that's how we were able to make it work. And we had some luck. You know, it was the timing. It was the end of the semester. And our students had already had good working relationship with the instructor. So we had some luck as well.
Exactly. Making the best out of a bad situation, I suppose.
It was making the best out of a bad situation, actually.
So you got through the current semester, and students are pretty much done at this point in advancing. You've got a deep pedigree in education, including leadership levels. What do you see happening in the fall, and how will Holland College pivot to still an unknown environment? It's probably going to be pretty tough to, you know, have people meet in group settings again in the fall. What kind of strategies are going on internally to adapt to this new reality?
Yeah, we have. We started out the virus, the lockdown, our team meeting daily. And then we moved after a few weeks to twice weekly meetings. And now we have a weekly meeting. We've identified, we're trying to identify three possible scenarios. Like, one would be, what's the worst case scenario where we are significantly under our projections for enrollments in September. We have the blue sky scenario where things are just as they were last September. And then we have a mid-range scenario, and we're developing a set of consequences and assumptions based on those scenarios. We probably will have that work done by the third week of May. And then we'll sit down, but we'll communicate that with our staff and determine the best way to go. We'll work with the provincial government as well, with whom we communicate very frequently. And we also we go back and forth with UPEI. I speak to Dr. Allen quite frequently, and our VP Doug speaks with their VP Jackie Podger. So we've got good communication in place, and we'll have probably a fairly detailed approach come the third week of May, based on the assumptions that we're going to make.
So you've been with the college, I think, since 2016. You've been the president for just over a year. You've built I think you had a good team, but you've built some more dynamic, leaders around you. I'm sure you never expect this kind of thing to happen, but you have a good team. Are you well positioned to kind of navigate this? I mean, the fact that you've got three scenarios, I'm not sure how many organizations are working at that level at this point, but that's good. Do you think the quality of your team is helping to get the college navigating this circumstance?
Yeah, as I said earlier about the faculty and the curriculum people and the program managers, I don't think there's a school in the country, big or small, that we'd take a back seat to. In terms of the senior management team, as I said earlier, a stress of this nature shows you the weaknesses in an organization or in a province or in a business, because your teams tend to split where they're weakest. And I can tell you, the other lesson we learned from this is we've got the right people in the right places. So people have really stepped up. It, as you say, it's difficult to work with so much uncertainty. But people have really boiled down and gone to work. We have over 100 people who are deemed essential here at the college. And so even though it doesn't look like much is happening when you drive by, there are people in there working hard. And we haven't really stopped our work in terms of recruiting for the fall. So that work continues. Of course, what the great unknown is, how will the international students be impacted, and how will our domestic enrollments be affected?
So I think, and we talked before we hit record just about the positives. Oh, sorry, Blake. Just the positives that do come out of it. Obviously, you guys had a bit of a plan in place. But what other positives do you see in terms of, well, from your perspective, because you have to kind of oversee so many people and have weekly or biweekly meetings. So what positives, maybe from a technological side, have you seen from in terms of maybe looking after staff or talking to staff?
Yeah, I think there are two broad ones, Sam. The first is we've seen a switch from the in terms of use of technology. Our email usage would be down probably 70% over the past little while our communication technology, some of the stuff we're using now, is probably up over 120%. So we've had some technology in place. And we found out that we were probably underutilizing a little bit. So that was kind of an interesting thing to find out. Second thing that has been a benefit, I think, is that we were all aware, staff and administration, that we were going to need to move in this direction in terms of more product online, more content online, different types of instruction, different types of assessment. This really forced our hand in the sense that it was moving from when and how we were going to do it to we're doing it now. So it's forced our hand a little bit, and it showed people that it's not so bad and things can work. But we need to spend a significant amount of time and resources in the preparation of our instructors and the tools we give them to make sure they can do this properly. Because there is I've heard rumblings from other provinces where, you put things online in 6 weeks, how hard can it be? And it's a cheaper way to offer post-secondary education. And in fact, it's not cheaper. It's significantly more expensive to properly prepare your instructors and properly support them with software and hardware. So it's not a cheaper approach. But in some ways, it's a much stronger pedagogically or andragogically than simply a face-to-face.
Especially from a perspective of putting like teachers that have been teaching for maybe 20 years and you still use overheads in some cases to put it fully on Zoom. I think not so much on PEI, but even in this area in Canada, but in the States, there's been a lot of kind of rumblings about whether the Zoom meetings have been hacked or the teacher forgets to click the unmute button or just little things like that just slow productivity completely. So I think it's important to note that it takes preparation.
I think there's a lot of ignorance out there about the kind of act of teaching. I think the idea that you can simply throw content on, take a teacher who spent most of his or her career teaching face to face, and then throw some content online and go to it, that is a gross misunderstanding. I think teaching online or teaching the blended model is in many ways much more challenging than simply face to face instruction. It can be much more effective in many areas, and the research shows that. But it takes a lot more time. You have to have the right tools and One of the things we found here, for example, internet connection was a factor for our staff if they lived in rural areas. Their own tools that they had at home, so the computers they were using was a factor. Some were a little bit dated, maybe. So we made sure we tried to get new technology in their hands. Some were comfortable with certain types of software, but not others. So we had to look at that. So all of those things are going to be challenges in the future, but it is not going to be a cheaper model. In many ways, it can be a more efficient approach, but it won't be cheaper.
So one of the best benefits, I think, for a student coming into the program is the high placement rate, so 95-97%. And we're coming into a period now where there's a lot of uncertainty in the economic environment. We see it in our business as far as even forecastability. So when you're looking at hiring people and growth in organizations, is there any way that the college can adapt to that? Are you moving maybe within even the programming to have more entrepreneurial elements? I mean, that's going to be a big point of, not friction, but challenge, I think, for all colleges and vocational institutions. How do you overcome that placement opportunity for new students coming out of the system?
Well, the biggest challenge prior to the virus, Blake, was the whole social and emotional skills component. I think colleges and universities are pretty good at preparing kids, students, the technical challenges of their job. But more and more with the advent of technology, the human side of things, communication, managing emotions, leadership, critical thinking, were all skills that a lot of industry were saying, listen, your students, your graduates just don't have enough of those. Some of those aren't easily taught in a college or university and are much more effective and taught in a workplace and are good at learning. So I think we're already moving in that direction. We've got some major projects we're doing with other colleges with the bioscience field here in PEI Atlantic Canada. And that's really what this is all about, making sure that by the time the students leave the college and go into industry, they've already had lots of experience in the industry. So to give you one example, if you were working in an IT program with us, you might get two approaches to an internship in your two-year period. What we'd like to do in some of our programs is have your internship start almost as you start at the college. So you get a feel for what's required from industry, and the industry gets a feel for what they need in a student. So we can get feedback from you on a fairly frequently basis, some of the feedback saying Blake Doyle is here and we can help him get to there. So we do that jointly. So we think that we're going to address those placements a little bit differently, but it calls for a broader and deeper interaction between ourselves and industry. And that really is the new generation of work integrated learning.
You mentioned Blake needing some new skills. He needs a lot. We need to bring him up a couple levels. So maybe you can get some sort of program for him. Bring up his listening skills, maybe.
Yeah. It's interesting roll. Because you hear lots of talk and debate around social and emotional skills. In 2002, I was involved when I was at the college the first time. I was involved in doing a national study along the University of Bourne and the College of Bourne. I was the lead researcher for the college side. And we were looking at what we called essential employability skills in those days. And what we found, and was similar to what the university found, it was found that these skills were very, very important. But they were very hard to quantify, hard to teach, hard to evaluate. And so the idea was that students would kind of pick it up as they went through their programs and into their internships. And we're finding now that industry is still telling us this is a shortcoming of your delivery model. And so to get to Blake's last question, unless we have a broader and deeper integration with the industry, we're not going to be able to really understand what those students need and get it to them prior to them completing their college program. Some of the schools around the world are already doing this, and so certainly some industries, all of the large industries, banks, insurance companies, multinationals in Canada and the United States, in the last 10 years, and certainly in the last five, have really put a ton of effort on retraining, basically reskilling their own staff. If you're a big company, you can do that. If you're smaller ones, like most in Atlantic Canada, you can't. So we need to do it jointly.
We've had a lot of chat, Sam, over the last 6 weeks with different organizations, companies. You know, how they're adapting, their models have changed sort of through this whole COVID experience. But just seeing what's happening at the college and the importance of that institution to our economy and to our business sector, I feel a lot more confident that there's a plan in place to adapt through this, to expand and grow, and maybe to provide some leadership to your collegial cousins in other provinces. But one question that's unrelated, you probably get asked this all the time, Sandy, is, you know, Samuel Holland, who is the mascot for the school, do you have to look like Samuel Holland, or does the mascot have to look like you? Which way did that kind of evolve?
That's a very good question. Unbeknownst to me, I was hired because of my resemblance to Samuel. It could have been one of those big tricolored hats that he's got, right? But that's a very good question. I'm not sure I can answer that. You'll have to ask the board. Our two co-chairs, Michael Bryan and Gordon McGinnis, would probably better answer that better than I can. But
if the mascot gets a goatee in the next year or so, we'll know if there's some related similarities. I think, unless you have anything else, Sam or Sandy, if there's anything else you want to add, I appreciate you taking a fair bit of time this morning, and I appreciate you sharing sort of your insights on how the college is adapting and thriving and going to progress through this situation.
It's been a very challenging time here. Anytime you're trying to shift your approach, we just had our strategic plan was just finished, if you can believe it, just prior to the lockdown. We're getting ready to present it to the board, and then we're going to present it to the chambers and get everything in the community and show that. So we'll be coming out shortly with our strategic plan. That's been in abeyance now for probably 6 weeks. But you'll see in our strategic plan that we were moving in this direction. So the timing of the virus, had it come another year from now, we probably would have been in a much better situation. But, you know, we didn't think we'd ever see anything like this. Okay, I don't think anyone has ever seen anything like this. I'm worried as a citizen and a taxpayer on PEI, I'm certainly worried about our economy. You mentioned Samuel Holland. The job of our colleagues here is twofold. It's number one, to make sure our students can find meaningful work on graduation so they can sell their skills to the highest bidder, so to speak. And it's also to support our industry. And since we don't really know what our industry will look like, we're dealing with a lot of uncertainty here. We kind of know from a 10,000 foot what the thing will look like, but driving down to the ground level, we still got a lot on our plate in terms of uncertainty.
Yeah, and I think that's the same. Like you said, it's industry, it's institutions like yourself, it's government. They're all, we have an idea of what it might look like, but we have no direct future looking into the future to see what it'll actually look like. But as Blake mentioned, we appreciate your time a lot. There's been a long list of good presidents within Holland College. We actually spoke not too long ago with Don Glenn, before all the virus happened, with Don Glendening, kind of the founding president. Ax McCauley, another great president, is there. I'm just trying to think of other names, but there's been a lot of good leaders, and you're certainly stepping up to the plate and proving to be a leader in this capacity as well.
Yeah, thank you, Sam. I had the good fortune to work with Alex McCauley for a time before I became superintendent of schools, and I really learned a lot from him. And I also was lucky enough to work with Brian McMillan, who was my predecessor for 2.5 years before I took this job. So certainly, when you go back to Don Glendening and Alex McCauley and Brian McMillan, tremendous shoes to fill. So I hope they didn't hire me because I looked like Captain Holland and that I was more like those other three. So we'll see.
Definitely. Yeah. Like you said, I actually went to on a trip when I worked in government with Brian to China to visit one of the campuses. But yeah, Brian's a terrific individual and a lot of great skills to the table.
Yeah. These buildings here you see, and on the waterfront and in Summerside, that was Alex and Brian, kind of brain and work to get through all of the challenges of that. So the campus looks very different than it used to look. Now, there's more to the campus than just buildings, of course. There's the people, and Brian and Alex spent a lot of time on that as well. So very fortunate to come in a position that was so we were in such good shape.
Certainly. Well, again, we thank you for our time, and sure we'll have an in-person interview next whenever COVID settles
down. Yeah, we'll have it down at Blake's office because I know he's got the cool office down there with the cooler. So next one we're going to have down there.
We'll keep her full. Anyways, thanks a lot, Sandy.
Thanks, guys.
We're eager to get back. Yeah, thank you.
There was our interview with President of Holland College, Sandy McDonald. Sandy's a great friend of ours and always been supportive of what we've been going on in the end of the podcast. He's been interested to get on for a few weeks now. So it's great to have him on and kind of give us a perspective from the college and what they're doing to pivot during the COVID-19 pandemic, and kind of gives us a view of what's going to happen for the future of the college and how they're moving towards more of almost a hybrid model versus a fully in-class teaching model. So we thank Sandy again for coming on. Again, we remind all our listeners to stay safe during this pandemic. Although Things are beginning opening up again. Golf courses are open now, and more non-essential services will be opening as the phases and weeks move on. But we remind everyone to still maintain your distance and don't go out unless you absolutely have to. It's important that we kind of band together, stick together, and make sure that we defeat COVID-19 and we are able to maybe enjoy some of our summer. So we thank you again. This has been another episode of The Exchange presented by Confederation Group. I'm Sam McPhail, and we will see you next time.